ಇವಂತ ಪ್ರವಿಶ್ಯ ಮಮವಾಚಮಿಮಾಂ ಪ್ರಸುಪ್ತಾಂ ಸಂಜೀವಯದಿ ಅಖಿಲಶಕ್ತಿಧರಸ್ವಧಾಮ್ನ ಅನ್ಯಾಂಶ್ಚ ಹಸ್ತಚರಣಶ್ರವಣತ್ವಗಾದೀನ್ ಪ್ರಾಣಾನ್ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ಪುರುಷಾಯ ತುಭ್ಯಂ. ಐ ಬೋ ಡೌನ್ ಟು ದಟ್ ಅಬ್ಸಲ್ಯೂಟ್ ರಿಯಾಲಿಟಿ ಹೂ ಕಂಟ್ರೋಲ್ಸ್ ಎನರ್ಜೈಸಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ರೆಗ್ಯುಲೇಟ್ಸ್ ಎಂಟೈರ್ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಷನ್ ಆಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಇಂಡ್ವೆಲ್ಲರ್. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ. ಓಂ ಪೀಸ್ ಪೀಸ್ ಪೀಸ್. ನೌ ಲೆಟ್ಸ್ ಮೆಡಿಟೇಟ್ ಆನ್ ದಟ್ ಅಬ್ಸಲ್ಯೂಟ್ ರಿಯಾಲಿಟಿ ಹೂ ಇಸ್ ದ ಇಂಡ್ವೆಲ್ಲರ್ ಇನ್ ಎಂಟೈರ್ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಷನ್. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ. ಹರಿ ಓಂ. ಫಸ್ಟ್ ವಿ ವಿಲ್ ಡೂ ದಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಮಂತ್ರ. ಐ ಥಿಂಕ್ ಐ ಹ್ ಆಲ್ರೆಡಿ ಗಿವನ್ ಎ ಡಿಟೈಲ್ಡ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪೋಸಿಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಮಂತ್ರ ವಿಚ್ ಇಸ್ ಫೌಂಡ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ಉಪನಿಷತ್. ಸೋ ಐ ಶಾಲ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಗಿವ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಎ ಬ್ರೀಫ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರಿಪ್ಷನ್. ಐ ಹ್ ಆಲ್ರೆಡಿ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೈನ್ ದಿಸ್ ಅರ್ಲಿಯರ್. ಓಂ ಭದ್ರಂ ಕರ್ಣೇಭಿ ಶೃಣುಯಾಮ ದೇವಾಃ ಭದ್ರಂ ಪಶ್ಯೇಮ ಅಕ್ಷಭಿಃ ಯಜತ್ರಾಃ ಸ್ಥಿರೈರಂಗೈಃ ತುಷ್ಟುವಾಂಸಸ್ತನೂಭಿರ್ವ್ಯಸೇಮ ದೇವಹಿತಂ ಯದಾಯುಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿನ ಇಂದ್ರೋ ವೃದ್ಧಶ್ರವಾಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿನ ಪೂಷಾ ವಿಶ್ವವೇದಾಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿನ ಸ್ತಾರ್ಕ್ಷು ಅರಿಷ್ಟನೇಮಿಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿನೋ ಬೃಹಸ್ಪತಿರ್ದಧಾತು. ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಎ ಪ್ರೇಯರ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಲ್ಟಿಮೇಟ್ ರಿಯಾಲಿಟಿ. ದ ವೇದಿಕ್ ಸೇಜ್ ಇಸ್ ಪ್ರೇಯಿಂಗ್ ಲೈಕ್ ದಿಸ್. Let me hear only good things with my ears and see only good things with my eyes. And let me be endowed with health and strength and determination so that I would be able to continue and complete this education, this discussion on the Upanishad philosophy. And this prayer is extended to Indra, Surya, that is Pusha, and other different deities mentioned in the Samhita portion of Rigveda. That is the point. We already explained this. And I think I have already explained the first mantra. The first mantra tells us that this entire creation is Brahman itself. Hari Om. Om iti edat aksharam idam sarvam. The particular letter Om, I have already explained. Om is the symbol of all that is within the time, space and causation, and all that is beyond time, space and causation. All that is within the empirical, the phenomenal level, and also all that is beyond the empirical that belongs to the transcendental level. In the commentary on this Upanishad, which is known as Karika, the author Gaudapada will further explain this very elaborately. And he will tell us this in his commentaries. This Om is a symbol which consists of three syllables from the standpoint of Sanskrit language: Akara, A, U and Ma. The word, this phoneme A, is the syllable A is pronounced with open mouth. O is pronounced with half closed or half open mouth. And Ma is pronounced with mouth completely closed. Now, all possible letters in any language in this world can be compressed, condensed into these three letters. Any language you take, after all, the extreme open vowel, like A, is pronounced with open mouth. Closed consonant is pronounced with mouth closed. And then between these two, there are other phonemes and syllables and sound systems. In any language, in any speech system in the world.
Now, what exactly is speech? What is the nature of the... In the beginning, there was Word, and Word was with God. You can find in Genesis, the Bible. Now, whatever we can think of in this world, whatever we can see or hear or contemplate on, we can do that only with the help of a sound system, a speech system. I already explained this earlier. Suppose you see a cow or a mountain, and when you recollect later, you have to associate the object that you see with a corresponding name. The object is, for your information, is technically called abhideya, what is objectified. And the name is called abhidhana in this Mandukya tradition, in the Mandukya Upanishad, the terminology. I will go to these details later. Right at this moment, I won't confuse you with this technical terminology, which is special to this Upanishad. But I'm trying to avoid as much as possible all the technical terminology at this stage. But later I will introduce those systems. Now, we can never think of, speculate or contemplate on anything in this world, any object in this world, with a corresponding counterpart in the form of a name. I have seen a table. So first I see this object, and simultaneously I have in my mind the word table. Somebody may raise this question. In fact, in the dialectical confrontation between Advaitins and non-Advaitins, this objection is raised by one of the rival schools of thought, Sankhya school, which was prominent during Shankaracharya's time. So they ask the question, well, suppose you see an object, the name of which you don't understand. You see a strange animal when you walk. You have not seen anything like that earlier. But again, I'm sure that you'll think of your experience, well, I've seen something, the name of which I don't know. Then the philosopher, Shankaracharya, replies, but you will always think, I have seen something, the name of which I don't know. So that amounts to the name you give to that animal. You see something, and later you remember. And the memory always takes the form of reliving the previous experience. The previous experience is repeated. When you see an object in front of you with your eyes open, that is Jagrat state, which is called during the waking state, you see an object and your eyes, two eyes and mind come together. So you see an object and your mind recognizes the object. So mind and jnanendriyas, which is called the sense of perception, eyes are involved when you see an object. Now, in dream, when you see the same object, you naturally see. In pitch darkness, you are sleeping, nothing is visible. You may even recollect running through the streets of San Francisco during the afternoon when the sun is blazing overhead, and you would see different objects, or you see with your eyes closed in pitch darkness when you are deep asleep at midnight. So there the memory is brought back to the surface of mind, which is called chittam in the technical language. And you relive, you re-experience the experience of waking state. Now, in the Upanishadic philosophy, Shankaracharya makes a striking point. He says, and this is a singular approach of this Upanishad, we have to remember. He says, so far as the mithyatum or illusoriness is concerned, there is absolutely no distinction between waking experience and dream experience. Both are equally unreal. This is not acceptable to any common sense thinker. But Shankara says, from the absolute point of view, so far as the illusoriness is concerned, the fact that both are unreal, so far as that fact is concerned, both are equally unreal. if you approach the dream experience and waking experience from the Turiya point of view, from the absolutic point of view, then both are equally unreal. But if you approach it from the waking state point of view, there is a difference. Because during waking state, you experience all this at the sthula level, at the gross level, and in dream state, you experience it at the subtle level. So what I said was this, when you close your eyes, you again see the same object which you saw when your eyes were opened. That experience is not different from the experience of dream. That is what this Upanishad says. In dream, you relive the experience. But these senses of perception are not involved. Only mind is involved in dream. So also in memory. So dream, memory, and recollection. These three states are more or less identical according to the Upanishadic point of view. Now, the first mantra tells us that the entire creation, what lies between time, space, and causation, which is called Trikala Adhinam, what is within the jurisdiction of time, space, and causation. The empirical world, the phenomenal world, is nothing but Omkara, a Brahman itself. And what lies beyond Trikala Atidam, that is stated here, Trikala Atidam, that is also is indicated by Omkara. Here, as I said, Jagrat, waking state, dream, Supna state, and deep sleep, Sushupti state. These three states are equated to three phonemes, three syllables, which constitute Omkara. Akara is identified with waking state, Ukara is identified with dream state, and Makara means the letter, the syllable Ma in Sanskrit. Ma is Makara, U is Ukara, and A is Akara. This is the way it is explained here. So these three letters are identified with three states of human experience, the waking, the dream, and deep sleep stage. And all these are within Omkara itself, within the jurisdiction of Brahman itself. That's why Bhutam Bhavat Bhavishyat, the past Bhutam Bhavat, what is happening in front of you, the present, and Bhavishyat, the future, that is within the jurisdiction of time, space, and causation. That is also Omkara, means that is also absolute reality. And yet, anyat, something else beyond that, Trikala Atidam, that is beyond time, space, and causation, beyond the past, present, and future, that Tadapi, that also is Omkara, means there is nothing in this world other than Brahman. Now, at this stage, any student of Indian philosophy, Vedanta, may raise the question, what about the well-known statement in the Veda? That is called, well-known statement, that is, Brahma Satyam Jagad Mithya Jivo Brahma Eva Naparaha. This famous statement. This is often raised. Whenever we take this mantra, this question arises. Brahma Satyam Jagad Mithya Jivo Brahma Eva Naparaha. This is the fundamental dictum of Vedanta. Brahman is reality. Jagat is mithya, means unreal. Not absolutely unreal, it means relativity. Mithya means relativity. Mithya or maya means that which is relative. That which comes somewhere in the past, exists for some time, and vanishes in the future. It is not absolute non-existence, but it is not absolute existence either. It is what is called relativity. So, Jagat is relative. And Brahman is the only absolute reality. And Jiva Brahmaiva Napara. Jiva is Brahman itself. This is the dictum. But here, it is stated what is within the jurisdiction of time, space, and causation is Brahman. And what is beyond is also Brahman. So, this mantra, apparently, if for a superficial reader, this mantra may sound a bit odd. It says everything is Brahman. Now, Vedantins give an answer. Everything is in this world is Brahman itself. From a philosophical point of view, from a philosopher's point of view, you may assert that Brahman is the only absolute reality. Everything else is only relative. But what is known as relative at the relative level is in fact the absolute itself. That is the ultimate conclusion. Brahma satyam jagad mithya jivo brahmaiva na aparaka. Brahman is the only reality. The world is relative is the statement from the philosophical point of view. But philosophy only the penultimate state. From the experience point of view, Brahma satyam jagat satyam, this is the statement of Vedanta. So that should be understood when you read this mantra. What is within time, space and causation is Omkara or Brahman. And what is beyond time and time, space and causation is also Omkara. Means Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. The point is, Jagat as Jagat is unreal, Jagat as Brahman is real. So when we mistake Brahman to be endowed with name and form, when we superimpose name and form on Brahman, it appears to be Jagat. Swamiji's statement is very classic. Swamiji puts this idea in modern language. Swamiji says, Swami Vivekananda says, when we look at Brahman, the absolute reality, through the prism of time, space and causation, through the medium of relativity, we have this world. But if you can look at the world from a standpoint which goes beyond relativity, then of course there is no world at all. That world is Brahman. That is, Surupa Drishtya Jagat Satyam, Nama Rupa Drishtya Jagat Mithya. This is the classic statement of Advaitic philosophers. When you look at Brahman by mistake as endowed with name and form, it appears to be endowed with name and form. It appears to be the mountains, valleys, rivers, oceans, skies, galaxies and stars and so on. Then it is not real. But when you look at the same phenomena from the absolute point of view, then you are not seeing the plurality. Rather, behind this plurality, you experience unity. Then, Surupa Drishtya Jagat Satyam. At Surupa, as its essence, it is Brahman itself, it is Satyam, it is real. But from the standpoint of name and form, it is unreal. In the sense, it is only relative. So that is the fundamental standpoint expounded in this mantra. So, Omiti Edat Aksharamidam Sarvam. Everything is the Brahman is Jagatakara, means Jagat itself. Tasi Upavyakhyanam. I mean, this Upanishad is nothing but a brief description. Upavyakhyana means an interpretation which takes you close to a proper understanding of the meaning of this Upanishad. That is Upavyakhyana. Upa means that it brings you close to it. Then you say, Bhutam Bhavat Bhavishyat. The past, the present and future. What is experienced within the jurisdiction of the triple dimensions of time is Brahman itself. That means the Jagat is also Brahman. But this is from the standpoint of experience. We have to remember in Vedanta, there are three stages in man's approach to understanding of reality. One is Shruti, means from the standpoint of scriptures. Scriptures can never explain the absolute reality. But scriptures help you to remove all the wrong notions that we have accumulated with regard to absolute reality. And when wrong notions are removed, then the right understanding will automatically come. So that's why it is said that Bhutam Bhavat Bhavishyati Sarvam Omkara Eva. Everything is Omkara. This point also should be explained further. The place of doctrines and philosophical works in understanding Vedantic truth. As I said just now, in Vedantic tradition, Upanishads, Vedas, Puranas, all these books, they are only unsuccessful attempts to explain what can never be explained. Vedanta doesn't tell you that this book contains the truth. But Vedanta tells you that this book contains a method which helps you to discover for yourself what is absolute truth. The example is given, that is classic example. Most of you must be familiar with this. A dim light room, there is not enough light, but it is not pitch darkness, but light is not enough. An object is lying on the floor. The old example is, it is a piece of rope. There are four people who are sitting in the room, and these four people have got four different perceptions, four different wrong understanding, wrong views with regard to what that object lying on the floor is. In fact, the object is a piece of rope, but they don't understand it. One of them thinks it is a snake because its shape and the way it lies, maybe. That man must have seen a snake in the zoo that day. So he associates its shape and its position with that object lying in the room. Another man thinks it is a kind of stick, a curved stick. The third man thinks it is a thin stream of light. Sorry, thin stream of water, jaladhara. So sarpa, snake, danta, stick, and then a thin stream of light. Sorry, again, thin stream of water. That piece of rope may resemble a thin stream of water. And the fourth man thinks it is a crack on the floor. These are the four superimpositions on that object. Four people have got four different views. Now, suppose somebody brings a light, or one of them opens all the windows. What is the role played by the light which comes through the window, or the light brought by another person? That is the role of all philosophical works, doctrines, the Gita, the Bible, and all the religious works. This light removes the wrong notion that each of them had before the light was brought. The first one understands it is not a snake, and what it is, nobody need to explain to him. It is rope. The second one understands that it is not a thin stream of water. Then what it is, nobody need to explain to him. It is piece of rope. And so on. So, and then the fourth one understands, the third one understands it is not stick, and the fourth one understands it is not a crack on the floor. Now, the fact that it is a rope is not a knowledge created by light. Even if you don't bring light, the rope will remain a rope. The light only helps you to remove the wrong notions, but sometimes called superimpositions, vikalpas in technical language. That light only helps you to remove all the wrong notions we had with regard to what the real object is. Now, if we read the Upanishads, we are able to remove all the wrong notions we had. What are the wrong notions? People generally think of themselves as the human body, as a set of senses of perception, senses of action. When you are walking, well, when you assert I'm walking, you mean the two legs which are moving, which are actually moving. or when you see an object with your eyes, when you assert, I am seeing this, you mean the eyes only. And again, when you feel hungry, then you don't mean by eye, you don't mean either the senses of perception or senses of action. You mean something else, prana in the language, the metabolic system. When you feel hungry, you feel, I am hungry. And when you say, well, I am happy or unhappy, you mean something else, which is neither body nor senses of perception or senses of action or vital energy or anything. You mean the mind. And when you say, I understand, you mean the intellect. Now, these are the wrong notions that we normally have with regard to what we are. Maybe I am the body, or I am the senses of perception, or I am the one who feels hungry or thirsty or angry, or the one, I am something, an entity which feels happy or unhappy, and so on. Now, when you read the Upanishads, we understand we are none of this. Then what exactly we are, that we understand, not through words, but through experience. And the Upanishads, the Vedic literature, makes a statement again and again, the language of experience is silence. Antaya bahuvadinam anantaya mukam. What is empirical can be explained in words. What is beyond the empirical, the transcendental experience, can only be explained through the language of silence. That's what the Vedic statements say. So that is the idea behind. From the experience point of view, this world is the same as the Brahman itself. From the philosophical point of view, we had to remove the wrong notions that we normally entertain with regard to what the reality is. So we had to assert that Brahma Satyam Jagad Mithya. This is the point. Next statement. Yacha anya trikala atidam. What is beyond time, space and causation, and what is beyond the triple dimensions of time, like past, present and future, that is also Brahman. Omkara is the term used to denote Brahman, because Omkara is not a word actually. In one sense, it includes all the words that you can utter in any language or in any speech system, anywhere in the world. From another point of view, it is not a word. So this is the implication of the first mantra. We already explained this. I just wanted to remind you of this. For a proper understanding of the first mantra, first sloka is important for understanding the implication of the second one. The second mantra, the second sloka, Sarvam hi edad brahma, ayam atma brahma, soyam atma chadushpad. Now, the mantra should be understood in this cross order. Edad sarvam brahma hi. Edad sarvam here means what we have already explained in the previous mantra. As Omkara, that is, what is within time, space and causation, and what is beyond time, space and causation, what is within the jurisdiction of past, present and future, and what is beyond the jurisdiction of past, present and future, all this is Brahman. We have to remember, time is only a concept. Time is not a reality. Time is only a concept. So very often Vedantic philosophers, they equate the concept of time with a line that we draw on the surface of water. The moment we, it is just a concept only. A line we can never draw on water surface. So time is nothing but a concept. Time is a very big subject in philosophy, physics and philosophy everywhere. So time is only a concept. So what is within this concept, time, is Brahman, and what is beyond the time concept is also Brahman. That was the statement made earlier. So, etat means all this, what we have already explained earlier, is Brahman itself. Now, the Upanishad takes another approach. Then, Ayamatma Brahma, this is a famous statement, it's called Mahavakya. Ayamatma Brahma is the Mahavakya associated with the Atharva Upanishad. Sorry, Atharva Veda, to which this Mandukya Upanishad belongs. Ayamatma Brahma is the Mahavakya, the great statement belonging to the Atharva Veda. Tattumasi is the Mahavakya, the great statement belonging to the Samaveda, which is called Chandogya Upanishad. Aham Brahmasmi is the Mahavakya, or the great statement belonging to Yajurveda, that is in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And Prajnanam Brahma is the fourth Mahavakya, which belongs to Aitareya Upanishad. That Aitareya Upanishad is a part of Rig Veda. These are the four statements. So this is a grand statement. I am Atma Brahma. Now what is meant by I am? I am means actually this. I am Ghadaka means this is a pot. Ghada means pot. I am Ghada means this is a pot. So I am means this. So this grand statement tells us, I am Atma. This Atma is Brahman. Now, here, I am Atma, this Atma denotes the indweller, the Antaryami, within every living being in this world. First, Upanishad says, all that you see around you, sarvam ki etat brahma, all this, all that you see, the oceans, the mountains, the rivers, the valleys, all the different creatures that you see, the entire world which we live in, of which we are a part, that we experience in everyday life, which is within the time, space and causation. This is Brahman. And what is beyond all this is also Brahman. So from a macro point of view, the first mantra, the Upanishad tells us that all these are Brahman itself. Now Upanishad tells what is within you is also Brahman. So first the Upanishad tells that the entire creation, the phenomenal world and the transcendental reality, all these constitute Brahman, all these are Brahman itself. Now one may think that Brahman is something, it is something extraterrestrial. Somebody who creates his world and sits somewhere in the high places supervising his creation. The Upanishad tells us, no, that Brahman is within you. It is immanent. It is the essence of every living being. That is the meaning of the statement. I am Atma Brahma. I am Atma. Atma here means the indweller, Antaryami it is called. The divine spark that is the indweller that dwells, that lives, and that energizes everything in this world. Without that, nobody can live. Atman doesn't walk, but without Atman being present in you, you cannot walk. Atman doesn't eat food. But if Atman leaves your body, you cannot eat anything. Atman doesn't drink water. But if Atman is not present, the consciousness is not present in you, you cannot drink water. You are a dead body. So there is something which leaves the human body, which renders the body incapable of walking, talking, eating, drinking, or anything. That consciousness itself doesn't engage in any of these actions. But in the absence of the consciousness, no action is possible. It is what is called Antaryami, the indweller. In Gita, there are two famous statements related to this. One is, Ahamatma Gudakesha Sarvabhudashesthidaha Ahamadischa Madhyamcha Bhudanam Antayavacha. This is famous. One is this. Sri Krishna tells Arjuna, Arjuna, I am present in every living being in this world. and the beginning and the middle and the end. I'm the regulator and the controller. I'm the inner regulator and controller of the entire creation. Then the 18th chapter also, Sri Krishna tells, Isharaka sarvabhudanam hridesi arjuna tishthadi brahmayan sarvabhudani yantra rudhani maya. It's also this point stated. This Brahman lives within every living being in this world as Atman, and then controls and regulates and operates the entire phenomenon, the creation, as its indweller. And example is given as an engineer who operates the machine. That is Guru Maharaj Sri Ramakrishna says in the gospel, I am the machine, you are the engineer. God is the engineer, I am the machine. So when you look at this absolute reality from the standpoint of this world in which we live, you can only understand him as the inner regulator, the inner controller of the universe. So, then in the next verse, second verse, the Upanishad tells us, I am Atma Brahma. Atma here means the indweller, the inner reality, which is present in every living being in this world, that is also Brahman. So not only the transcendental or the phenomenal existence, but also the inner reality present in every living being in this world is also Brahman. That is, I am Atma Brahma. This idea is brought out in a very famous verse in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there are a number of mantras. It begins like, Ye prithivyam dishtan prithivyam mantraha, ye prithivi naveda, yasya prithivi shariram, yem prithivyam hantaro yamayadi. That's how these five functions are given here. Eshataya atma antaryami amrutaha. Ye jyatyamalkyas instruction to Maitreya. I shall explain this in English. Jyatyamalkyas says, that reality which exists in the entire creation on earth. Prithviya means on earth. That reality exists on earth. Then one may think all these things which are existing on earth, like mountains, river, trees, all these are Brahman. No. So it says it is within. It is not visible outside. In that case, there are so many things under the earth. No. It is that reality which the earth itself doesn't know. It is that reality of which earth is only a vehicle, only an expression. That reality which exists on earth, which is within the earth, which is not visible, and of which this earth is only an expression. And existing everywhere within, that reality controls this earth. And then the Upanishad continues. Now earth is given as a vehicle. Souls in waters, heavens, in all the humans, senses of perception, senses of action, all that you can think of, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad tells. That reality is present, it exists as an indweller on everything in this world. But it is different from that. It is not visible, but it is present everywhere. Everything in this world is a vehicle, is an expression of that reality. So, that idea is brought out in a pithy statement in this mantra, I am Atma Brahma. So the absolute reality, which is transcendent, which is omnipresent, is also immanent. I am Atma Brahma. Here, the commentator will tell you, the Upanishad points out at you, I am, means the reality which is beyond and also which is omnipresent is also present in within you as the indweller. So it points out, it puts the finger at you and tells you that that Brahman is your indweller also. That's why it is. So it points a finger at your heart. Because whenever we try to identify ourselves, we place our hands here. We don't say I like that, We don't put our hands on the head or anywhere else. When you I, you place your fingers at the chest. It's called Hridayakasha. So the commentator will tell you that the Upanishad points right at your heart and tells you that this Brahman, which is the origin of the universe, which is responsible for the existence of the universe, and which is also the point of dissolution of the universe, which is omnipresent and transcendent, is the indweller within your heart. So, in the Chandogya Upanishad, the Upanishad tells you, Hridayam, this word in Sanskrit called Hridaya means heart. It is not the heart as understood in medical science. It is something that we can only conceptualize. Hridayam means the Atman constantly reminds you that I am present here. That is the description of the word Hridayam. So here the Upanishad tells you, I am Atma Brahma. This pointing the finger at you, you say, what is present within you is this Brahman itself. This Brahman is not something outside of you. It is not an extraterrestrial entity. It is within you. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, this aspect is brought out in a more graphic style. In Taittiriya Upanishad, there is a passage which corresponds to the genesis of the Bible. A famous statement. Saha akamayeda bahusyam prajayedi satapo adapyada sadabastaptva idam sarva masrijada tat srishtva tadeva anupravishat tat anupravishya satchatecha bhavat. This is the genesis of Taittiriya Upanishad. That is in the Veda, in the entire Vedic literature. These ideas are repeated in many other Upanishads. This is almost runs parallel to the Genesis, but of course, in a very, very limited manner, of course. It tells, and God so willed that there be light, and there was light, something like that. God so willed, saha akamayada, aichada, but will is something different here. God, say, will here is an involuntary action. Creation is explained here. And creation is explained not as something different from creator. The Upanishad goes on telling us that there is no distinction between creator and creation. So, saha akamayada, that reality will, and created this world. Let me become many, and became many. So, from a philosophical point of view, the material cause and efficient cause are the same. Saha akamayada, it shows the efficient cause is the Brahman reality. Let me become many. What becomes many? What becomes creation? Is creator himself. So material cause also the same. The efficient cause and the material cause of creation is the one Brahman itself. And after creating it, this Brahman entered everything and became one with the creation. It is not a physical action that is being explained here. The fact that there is no distinction between creator and creation, the fact that God is not somebody who creates his world and sits outside of the world, this idea is brought out in the language, in a highly graphic, picturesque language in the Taittiriya Upanishad, in the Yajurveda. So there also it says the indwellership of this absolute reality is brought out. Created this world and it entered this world and became one with it. So here it's that's why this Upanishad, I am Atma Brahma. This Brahman, which is non-different from what lies within time, space and causation, and which is non-different from what is beyond time, space and causation, is also the indweller, the inner reality, the immanent reality within everything in this world, within you. Soyam Atma Chadushpad. Next, the Upanishad tells, this Atma has got four quarters. That should be explained. Four quarters. These four quarters are explained in the Mandukya Upanishad as four levels of human experience. Four levels in which this absolute reality functions or operates. As I said earlier, normally we have three levels of experience. Last time I explained, the waking, the dream, and the dreamless sleep state. Jagrat, Sopna, and Susupti, respectively. Now, Mandukya Upanishad tells us that this Atma, it is present in waking state, and in waking state, it experiences everything at the gross level with the mind and senses of perception and senses of action. That is very obvious, we all know. At that stage, this Atman, which is the witness, is called Drashta, is called Vishwa. That is a technical term used in the Mandukya Upanishad and Mandukya Karika. Vishwa is nothing but that Atman, which will be called Turiya later on. Which later the other terms will be Turiya, it is called. The Atman of Brahman, Brahman as Antaryami, is called Atman, which is present in all of us, as a witness of all experiences in waking state, is called Vishwa. And then, what is Vishwa? Vishwa is nothing but this Atman seated in waking state as the enjoyer, as a witness. It's called Drashta. Experiencing all these worldly experiences at the gross level. Now, the same Atman, a Brahman, which will be called Turiya later on, in later mantras we call it Turiya, it is seated in all of us in dream state also. Then it is called Taijasaha. So the Upanishads will later explain, especially in the Karika. It explains why do you argue that the one who experiences will have all these experiences in waking state is the same reality which experiences all this in dream state. Don't you think these are two different entities? The Upanishad, the commentator will answer, you can never have a dream which is completely different from your waking experiences. But at the same time, there are fundamental differences between dream experience and waking experience. In waking experience, it takes 5 hours to reach New York. In dream, it may take split second. So this kala bheda means difference with regard to time. And then in waking state, we have experiences at the gross level. In dream, all experiences are a subtle level. Only mind is involved. Senses of action and perceptions are not involved. Mind itself projects all this. So, in dream. So, there are differences. So, they call sukshma sthula bheda, it is called in Sanskrit language. Means the difference with regard to grossness of waking experiences and subtlety of dream experiences. Then, there is another very important difference. You go to sleep here and you are doing all the work till now here in San Francisco, When you dream, you feel, well, you dream as we have reached some European countries thousands of miles away. So there is difference with regard to place, space. So Kala Bheda, Desha Bheda, and Sthula Sukshma Bheda. These are the three differences. The difference with regard to grossness or subtlety. The difference with regard to place or space. And the difference with regard to time. All these differences are between dream and waking experiences. But at the same time, you can never have a dream which is completely unrelated to your waking experiences. You may perhaps dream that you are flying in the sky. Now, during your waking experience, you have seen many objects flying. So the idea of flying you acquired during your waking existence. So the idea of flying is a legacy of your waking experience. And so no one can have a dream experience which has no relation at all with his waking experience. That means it is the same witness, the same antaryami, the same indweller, the same experiencer who continues to experience in dream what he has experienced in waking state. In dream, we are only reproducing or reliving our waking experiences in a subtle manner, in a subtle level, at a different level, that's all. Now, this Upanishad will tell you, when you open your eye, you see something, you close your eyes, if you see the same object, that experience is not different from dream. You open your eyes, you see the mountain in front of you. Close your eyes, again you see the mountain. So it's the same actually. Mountain is not visible in front of you, but you close your eyes, still you see the mountain. And this is possible not only with regard to eyes, your hearing also. You hear a song in the morning, next day you again repeat it. You are not hearing, sound waves are not coming to your ears, but mentally you are hearing. At the mental level you can hear. That's why you are able to repeat the song. That's why you are able to memorize things. Memory is the strongest indication that the same witness continues to experience in dream what he has experienced in waking state. Otherwise you cannot have memory. This idea. So we have already explained waking state and dream state. In waking state, this indweller, this Atman is called Vishwa, and it is called Tejasa in dream states. And in deep sleep, we do have experience, but we don't have consciousness. We are not aware of what we experience in deep sleep, means dreamless sleep. It's called Sushupti. So these terms should be clearly understood. Waking state is called Jagrat, because all the Kairigas and Upanishad mantras, when you read, you find Jagrat state is waking state. Swapna state is dream state, and Sushupti is dreamless sleep or deep sleep state. In deep sleep also, this Atman as indweller is present. All the Upanishad texts assert this point. And as an important proof for this fact, the Upanishads repeatedly make a statement. Aham sukham asvapsam. So after getting a very good sleep, you make the statement, you assert that you had a very good sleep. But when you are in dreamless sleep or deep sleep state, you don't experience that you are having a blissful experience. In fact, that's why I said, you know, everyone longs for dreamless sleep. Sushupti. Upanishad tells you, in Sushupti state, we are becoming one, we get identified with Atman or Brahman, but we are not aware of it. only if you can consciously experience that unity, then only you can become a liberated soul. Liberation is possible only if we experience it with consciousness. See, if you yourself do not know what you know, then your knowledge makes no difference. Suppose you know everything about something, but you are absolutely convinced that you don't know anything about it, then your knowledge is as good as absolute ignorance. So, if we experience bliss with full consciousness, then only it is experienced as bliss. In Sushupti, in dreamless sleep, we experience unity with Atman, but we are not aware of it. We are completely unaware of it. I often used to give the example of a typical example in many of these classes. You know, whenever we make the statement, there is a similarity between the experience of samadhi and the experience of sushupti. Many people will be surprised. You know, Swamiji makes a statement. Of course, it's a statement from a purely rhetoric point of view. Swamiji says, a fool goes into samadhi and returns an enlightened man, but a fool goes into susupti and returns a fool. Now, animals also perhaps experience susupti. In fact, I discussed this matter with some veterinary doctors, and they assert animals do not have dreams, but they certainly go to sleep. And if they go to sleep and if they don't have dreams, that should be the state of dreamless sleep, sushupti. But they don't become enlightened people. The Upanishad, in the Brihadaranyaka and Chandogya, this point is discussed again and again. Now, the point is this. What is the distinction between conscious experience of blissfulness in dreams, in deep sleep, and unconscious experience of blissfulness? Suppose somebody knocks you down and you fall unconscious, and somebody puts you in a bag, tie you around and put in a plane and take you to New York. God forbid it never happens. But as an example, and you are brought back. Technically, physically, from a physical point of view, you have gone to New York and you are brought back. But it is as good as not having gone to New York. But if you have a definite business to execute in New York, you buy a ticket, book a ticket, you board a plane, you go there, you execute your business, you finish your work and return. That journey to New York is totally different from being taken there in an unconscious state. So, susupti is comparable to the previous example. When you go there in a totally unconscious state, it is as good as not having gone there. Now, when a person practices sadhana tadushtaya, like proper discrimination between what is real and unreal, internal and external discipline, and when he becomes eager for liberation, that is, these are called sadhana tadushtaya. I need not go into those details. There are four important qualifications for every spiritual aspirant. He should have a clear sense of discrimination. Discrimination means wisdom, wise understanding. Not discrimination is negative connotation. What is meant by Viveka Chudamani is called? It should be better translated as the crown jewel of wisdom. When you wisely understand what is real and what is not real, and then when you give up all desire for any kind of enjoyment in this world or next, and when you are endured with all internal qualifications, and when you are eager for liberation, these are the four qualifications. Sadhana sadushtaya sampatti, it is called. With this, if you practice meditation, contemplation, and then when you get samadhi, the sense of unity with that absolute Brahman, that makes you an enlightened man. It's like deliberately going to the airport, buying a ticket, going to New York, doing your work and returning with full satisfaction. Then you are a different man. You have executed your job. You have finished your job. Now, the Upanishad tells you that this reality is present in dreamless sleep, in Sushupti state as well, in deep sleep state as well. This Atman is present in waking state as Vishwa, in dream state as Taijasa, and in Sushupti or dreamless sleep or deep sleep state as Prajna. The only difference is in waking and dream levels, you experience various things. There is plurality. There is the existence of plurality. But in dreamless sleep, you are enjoying bliss, but you become aware of this experience only when you return to waking state. When you are within dreamless sleep state, when you are enjoying the bliss, you are not aware of the fact that you are enjoying it. You become aware that you had a good sleep, you had a good rest only when you are returned from deep sleep to waking state. Then you say, well, I am fully rested. That's why everyone has got a natural eagerness and tendency to enjoy that state. It is kind of homecoming. Brahmajnanam, or the knowledge of Brahman, Atman, is not something that you are going to attain. It is a kind of homecoming. You just rediscover your real nature. You are not getting any new knowledge. It is in the Vedantic text, you have tied a diamond on your neck, and you go in search of it everywhere, and ultimately you discover it within yourself. Something like that. You are just rediscovering your true nature. You are not getting any new knowledge. Because if you get a knowledge, then that knowledge is likely to be lost at some point of time. Anything which you acquire will be lost. There's a possibility of it getting lost sometime. Anything which you produce may cease to exist. Anything which comes out of a cause may cease to exist. But Brahmajnanam is something which is not produced. It's called in the Vedantic language Utpadya, Vikarya, Samskarya, and Apya. These are four means. Brahman is not something that is produced as a pot is produced from clay. Pot, you break it, you go back to it, will go back to clay. So pot is not a permanent state of permanent status of clay. And it's not something that you acquire. You go from one place to another, you can return also. So Brahmajnanam is not something that you attain by going from one status to another status. It is not something that you process as you process seeds and you get oil. It's not anything like that. It is not something which is produced as a result of change. Not at all. Not vikarya. It is your own true nature. But you understand it only when you understand it. That is called maya. Maya is something which really doesn't exist. But you understand that it really doesn't exist only when you go beyond it. That's another term is avidya. Navidyade iti avidya. Avidya or maya. It is something which really doesn't exist. But you are fully convinced that it does exist when you are within it. When you go beyond it, then only you realize that it was something which actually did not exist. So, till one realizes the true nature of this witness, which is present in waking, dream, and deep sleep states, till you realize that it is really the Atman, the Turiya, which is present in all the three states, but is it distinct from all these states? It is present in all these three states, but it is distinct also. It's different also. It can be compared to three rooms built one above the other. Suppose you visit these three rooms, first top, first story, second story, third story. You can freely move from place to place. You can move. So you don't belong to any of these rooms. If you belong to any of these rooms, you will not be able to go to other rooms also. If you are able to move freely upward and downward, it means you don't belong to any of these places. You are distinct from this. At the same time, you can be present in all the three. So, Thuriya or Atman, this Antaryami, it's called Soyam Atma Chadushpad, it is called. This Atma, which is Antaryami, which is an indweller, it has got four quarters. Here, you have to remember, Thuriya is not actually a state, as waking condition is a state, dream is a state, deep sleep is a state. Thuriya is not a state. It is called a state only from a relative point of view, means for want of a better term, because you know, Upanishads evolved at a time when philosophy was highly evolved and language was still at its infancy. So very often the Upanishads have to use certain terms, you know, the limitations of language in expressing philosophical absolute truth, absolute philosophical truths. So it says, I am Atma Brahma. This Brahman, which is omnipresent, omniscient, transcendent, is also immanent, is the indweller, the inner reality, which is present in every living being. And it is present in waking state as Vishwa, in dream state as Taijasa, and in Susupti or deep sleep state as Prajna. At the same time, it doesn't belong to any of these three states, but it is present in all the three states. It is distinct from all these three states, which means it is not confined to, it is not limited by any of these three states. It's beyond all this. And anything which is absolutely real, absolutely eternal, should qualify three criteria in Vedantic tradition. The first criterion is that it should be present without any change in all the three states of human experience. That is Jagrat, Sopna, Susupti states. It should be the same, the unchanging reality in waking, dream, and deep sleep states. And Atman Thuriya is the unchanging reality, which is present as the eternal witness in all the three states. Second, it should be the unchanging reality in all the three points of time, the past, present, and future. It should be Trikala Atitam, beyond the triple dimensions of time. The third criterion is, it should be beyond the six changes. It should not be something which is created. It should not be something born. And it should not undergo the change called growth or evolution or decay and destruction. It is called Jayade Asti Vardhade Viparinamade Kshiyade Nasyati. Anything which belongs to that time, belongs to the triple dimensions of past, present, and future, will be born one day, it will grow, and it will disappear one day. This Atman is not born, so it will never die. It cannot be destroyed. So these are the three criteria by which we decide whether this Atman, this Brahman is real or not. And it Thuriya as Antaryami, which is the eternal witness in the three states of Jagrat, Sopna, and Susupti, waking, dream, and deep sleep states, is the unchanging reality, the witness in all the three states, and remains without any change throughout. Time is up. We'll continue this class the next Friday. So, Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Atma Vastu. Om Peace, Peace, Peace.